I'm Mark Purcell, and this is the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU and WMUB. Thanks for listening on this Saturday morning. My next guest is one of my favorite writers who's taught me so much about animals and life with animals. On the phone with me from Bedlam Farm in upstate New York is bestselling author John Katz, whose new book is Saving Simon, How a Rescue Donkey Taught Me the Meaning of Compassion. John Katz, welcome back to the Book Club at 91.7.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thanks for having me back.
I mentioned I learned so much about dogs and dealing and talking with my dogs from reading your books, and now you've introduced me to Simon, the donkey. And while I, as many Americans, knew a little bit about donkeys, I've learned a lot in Saving Simon, though you had an education in donkeys before Simon came along, right?
I did. I had two donkeys when Simon came along, Lulu and Fanny. They're still here. They were sisters. And they, when Simon came, the new ritual of the morning was each one of them would kick him right in the head. This was donkey communication. So every morning began with Simon braying, and the girls. And I asked the farrier, why are they kicking Simon in the head? And he said, because they're the queens, and he's just Simon. I think that was the case.
I laughed out loud about that account, because that was something that happened when you first introduced Simon to the other two donkeys, because they had been there and he was recovering from all his troubles before he came to Bedlam Farm, and I laughed out loud hearing how they kicked him in the head, and he just stood there and took it. So
he stood there and took it every morning. As you know, Simon was taken off a farm by the New York State Police, and he was just about dead. He is a wreck. He had been starved and neglected, and his hooves were twisted, and his teeth were infected. And he had rain rot and lice, and he was just a mess. And so they brought him to my farm because I had two donkeys, and I agreed to take him. And it was a very powerful experience. I mean, he was a very trusting, loving, and accepting creature. You know, I should mention here, he did pass away just a week or two ago, so people should know that. But in the time he was here, he was, you know, he recovered. He was great. He was healthy. He had many admirers. And he was very frisky with the ladies, and they didn't quite always care for that. But donkeys are fascinating characters, and he was a great experience being with him.
You observe in Saving Simon that you talk to Simon in a way that you didn't talk to your dogs, that the donkeys somehow inspired you for a different type of conversation.
Donkeys are amazing animals. You know, we're kind of losing touch with them. There aren't that many around. And although there are many in the world, there are 30 or 40 million donkeys in the world doing all kinds of work for people. And they're very hardy. They're very healthy animals. They're incredibly intuitive, very smart. When Simon came to the farm, he was almost dead, and he really needed, he couldn't stand. He was lying down in the pasture, and we had to hand feed him hay and all. And I started reading him donkey stories. I started reading him Plato and I and excerpts from donkey literature about strange men and donkeys wandering around together, as I became one of those. And he just loved it. He loved being read to. He was incredibly trusting. I could reach my hand into his mouth and put ointment on his quite painful and swollen gums. You know, donkeys can be, they're very independent. They're a little bit like cats in the sense of they don't give it away. You know, it has to be their idea.
Yes.
And they're very friendly if they're in the mood, and if they're not in the mood, too bad. But Simon was always loved attention. He loved people. He loved being around people. He loved being read to. And I think he loved being tended to. I think as he got stronger and better by the day, we had this kind of great dialogue going where I would tell him what I was doing and talk to him. And he always seemed to grasp what I was getting at. So that was a beautiful thing to see.
Well, him paying attention, I love your descriptions of his eyes watching you and studying you, and basically how donkeys study the world around them. They pay close attention to what's happening in the environment.
Well, donkeys, you know, donkeys have been with humans longer than any other domesticated animal, including dogs. And they go all the way back. They're in the Bible, so they're in cave drawings. People have been around donkeys for a long time, and they really know people very well. They're very, very intuitive animals. When you come out to the pasture, if you have a medicine in your pocket or a syringe in your pocket, they take off. They just look at you and they know. If you have cookies in your pocket, they're right there. But they really can read intentions more so than any animal. You know, I believe I love dogs, of course, but I think they're quite smarter than most dogs. because they're out in the world and they have decisions to make. And donkeys have been so overworked and worked in so many different circumstances. They seem to have a great sense about what's good for them. And they simply will not do things they think are not good for them. And if you want to have a test of wills, try to get a donkey to do something a donkey does not want to do. Not going to happen.
Not going to happen at all. Saving Simon, How a Rescue Donkey Taught Me the Meaning of Compassion, a new book from John Katz, the best-selling author of Adventures on Bedlam Farm, Good Dog, and so many other great books. You can learn all about them at our website, wvxu.org. And I was struck again in reading Saving Simon, John, to observe that you find these stories behind these animals, and it's really the story behind these animals who come to Bedlam Farm that really lead you on so many journeys of the heart and the mind. It's fascinating to see the many paths you get led down.
Well, I think I came to the farm because I wanted to write about animals, and that's been was a great decision for me. You know, the animals come and they do have these great stories, they do have these great connections, and they all teach us something if we're open to it. So being a writer, I write about that. I have time to pay attention to them and watch them and live with them and share the stories. I think most people in America especially have become very disconnected from the animal world, very disconnected from the natural world. And you know, we used to have animals around us all the time. And now it's controversial with animals. You know, I've been writing about the carriage horses in New York. I know you've had some in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And people think it's abuse for a horse to pull a carriage. So it's become controversial. So all the things that animals have done for thousands of years and been comfortable doing, we now think are scary, and they were pushing them away. And I think that's sad, because I think, you know, we have an animal like a donkey. You see how they love to work. You see how they love to be with people. You see how adaptable they are. You know, I started taking Simon for walks around the farm, and the farmers would drive by and yell out the window, "Two asses on the road," which I thought should have been the name of my book, actually. And we had, it's a great experience for me to actually get to know the real lives of real animals. And I think that's something we're in danger of losing. We're thinking of all animals as being pets, and we're treating all animals like pets. And that's not good for them, because it's one reason why they're disappearing from the world is, you know, we don't seem willing any longer or tolerant making work for them and giving them things to do. We consider it abuse.
Well, and you point out in Saving Simon that donkeys, like many working dogs, do enjoy having a job to do.
Well, working animals, the domesticated working animals, not only enjoy it, they need it. I mean, they're genetically programmed for it. You know, you suffer when you take a horse or a donkey and you put them out in a pasture with nothing to do all day but stand around and drop manure. That's not good for them. You know, it's not good for their muscles. It's not good for their intellect. It's not good for their development. And they need to be around people. You know, you go to New York and you see the carriage horses all day long, or people are touching them and petting them and coming up to them. This is what they're bred to do. These animals have never been out in the wild. They've always been among people having work. And animals that have work survive. Animals that don't have work disappear. So I think we have this inverted idea of what animal rights are sometimes, you know, that sometimes the real rights they need are to be around us and have things to do with us. You know, if an animal makes money for people, the animal's going to be treated well and do well and have a future. If they don't, they're going to disappear. And that's the sort of sad truth of it, I'm afraid.
And you point out the dilemma, you know, talking about the issue with the carriage horses and other animal issues, how people are frequently compassionate to animals but not always compassionate to other people. And it's really a dilemma. And you also point out, I think at one point you talk about you tend to be compassionate to people and animals who you like and who like you, but it's more difficult for the people that you don't, whose beliefs are something, you know, offensive to you. It's harder to be compassionate to those folks. So it can be a real dilemma.
It's a real dilemma. And one of the great lessons of Simon for me was this understanding of real compassion isn't just being nice to people you like. It's being nice to people you don't like. Or being understanding of them in any case. And, you know, I went to see the farmer who had mistreated him so severely and wondering how I was going to feel about him. And I didn't end up hating him. I ended up thinking, this poor guy is just beat up and worn out and it kind of lost his soul a bit. But I think the larger question, you know, is very important. I worry as a person who's always supported animal rights, I worry that the whole idea of animal rights has become equated now with being nasty to people. And I don't think you can separate one from another. I don't think you can love animals and hate people or use animals to hate people. I think a movement that really is for the rights of animals is going to fight for them to stay with us, not to be removed from us, and to treat them well, which I think is very noble and important. And Simon is, of course, a great lesson in another way, because he reminds people of what abuse really is. You know, abuse is a crime. It speaks to the grievous mistreatment or killing of animals. It's not about pulling a carriage or giving a pony ride. You know, the abuse has lost its meaning, but it's a crime. And Simon was genuinely abused. Everybody I meet with a dog these days tells me their dog was abused. And I say, well, why? Well, you can tell because he's skittish around loud noises.
Hmm.
You know, it's like, I think this whole idea of seeing animals as piteous and abused creatures is unhealthy for them. There are many who are abused, obviously, and it's important to help them. But animals like dogs in America probably live the best lives of any animals on the earth. And it's important to recognize that, too. I don't want to only see animals through their prism. I never referred to Simon as a rescue donkey. He doesn't need the term. And my publisher put it on the title, of course, because they know that that sells books. But I didn't see him that way. He didn't need to see himself that way. You know, so we moved away from that. But I think we need a wiser and more mystical understanding of animals, and it needs to come from the reality of what their lives are. When people say animals like carriage horses should be in the wild, they don't know that there is no wild in the first place, and that these animals have never been in the wild. Mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't survive an hour out there. These big workhorses, they eat too much hay, and they're too prone to predators, and they're subject to the weather, and they don't have any medical care. And they would not do well there. The animals who are cared for and sheltered and given work are the lucky ones. So it's almost like, and you know, the donkeys definitely remind you of that. I mean, they love to haul things. They love to give rides to people. They love to be around people. You know, they're like us. You know, we need to work. They need to work. We need things to do. And any animal living, a human or animal who has nothing to do but stand around all day, is just going to disintegrate. It's not a healthy life, I don't think.
What has life been like at Bedlam Farm since Simon passed? I know from having lost some of my companions recently that it can be difficult. What have you missed about Simon?
Well, I miss Simon's morning bray. Every time he gave it bone-rattling bray when he saw me, which just shook the place. And he could hear me inside the house. When I got up in the morning, I put my feet on the floor, he would start screaming because he was going to get food. And I miss that. I don't think the girls miss him a bit, personally. I think they were, when he had a stroke and when he was lying there, they were grazing, like, right next to him. And, you know, animals are very adaptable, and they teach me to be adaptable. You know, my choice in the, you know, grieving is a complicated thing, and some of it's a choice and some of it isn't a choice. And insofar as I have a choice, you know, I prefer to focus on what I have and not what I've lost. I'm certainly sorry to lose him and loved him dearly, but, you know, there will be more animals and life will move on, and it has moved on. I lost a dog, Lenore, in the week also, so it was definitely a challenging week. But, you know, if you're going to live with animals, this is going to happen. They don't live as long as we do. A lot of things can kill them. And I just choose to celebrate their lives. You know, he had a great life for a donkey. He had a great ride. He had tons of carrots and hugs and kisses, and mm-hmm. He had a good time. So that's how I feel. I feel good about it. I really feel good about it. I do miss him for sure, and I definitely feel the loss of him. But I don't want to turn my life with animals into a misery every time one of them dies, because it's going to be a misery all the time. So I have Red, the Border Collie, and we still have Frida, Maria's dog, and two donkeys and sheep and barn cats and chickens, and that's quite a bit, actually. And I think there'll be more and more to come. You know, somebody called today, they have a baby goat. They're wondering if I want, so we're just thinking about that.
Oh, I've been learning about goats. I look forward to what you learn about goats.
You have a goat?
I don't have a goat, but I've been learning a lot about goats because I have a friend who has a bunch of goats.
I had goats once. I had once a few years ago, and a farmer said to me, don't ever have an animal smarter than you are. And I thought, okay, that was the story of the goats. They are wicked smart. I'd come every morning, and they'd be standing on top of my car.
Yeah. Well, John Katz, thank you for learning lessons and sharing them with us and allowing me to learn from your experiences as well.
It's always good to talk to you, Mark. I appreciate it.
John Katz, his new book is Saving Simon, How a Rescue Donkey Taught Me the Meaning of Compassion. You can learn more about John and Simon, the book, and life by visiting our website, wvxu.org. The Book Club at 91.7.
Right now, on The Book Club at 91.7, we're asking you, what book have you read over and over?
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm from Northside. I think I've read Barren in the Trees by Italo Calvino more than any other book. I can't say why, it's just something about the feel, the atmosphere that he creates. You know, it's kind of a fairy tale, but it's also definitely for grown-ups too. But I find it's kind of comfort food for me. I can go back and read it again and again, and each time I find something new, I find I enjoy it more each time I go through it.
My name is Elizabeth Truitt, and I live in Marymount. I have to say, it's got to be the Harry Potter series. Actually, it's one of those that is an easy escape for me. I can pick it up in any order, and it doesn't matter. And Rowling has just obviously such an incredible narrative that kind of makes you escape, and you can leave whatever you're doing and jump into that and then jump right back into what I'm doing.
Hi, I'm Gara from Mount Washington. I have read Hero and the Crown by Robin McKinley over so many times. I'm on my second copy of the paperback. So about college, I had to replace it. And I'm still on that copy, but just full of adventure, again, strong characters, very strong female leads, and just a really comforting read.
So what's your answer? What book have you read over and over? Call 352-9188 with your answer. That's 513-352-9188 to leave a voicemail and answer the question, what book have you read over and over?
This is the Book Club at 91.7. Been listening to the Book Club at 91.7. Bruce Ellis is technical director, Kevin Reynolds, producer, Robin Carey Allgaier is the announcer, Jim Nolan, web guru, Rick Andres, music director and segment engineer, and I'm Mark Purcell. On next weekend's show, 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die from former New York Times restaurant critic Mimi Sheridan. Ponderables, discoveries that changed the world. Who did what when? And I'll talk to Cincinnati native Sherry Goldhagen about her second novel, In Some Other World, Maybe. I hope you'll be here for the Book Club at 91.7 next Saturday morning. NPR's Weekend Edition, next on 91.7 WVXU.